Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, everyone. I got a special announcement for you today. This year marks the 25th anniversary of Slate. So for a limited time only, we are offering our annual Slate Plus membership at $25 off. As a member, you will get no ads on any of our podcasts. That includes this podcast. You also get unlimited reading on Slate.com and member-exclusive episodes and segments from shows like Slow Burn and Amicus and the Political Gabfest. For the past quarter century, Slate podcasts have been covering all the major news events, elections, social issues, and historic court decisions. Our culture shows have debated if things are sexist, named the best summer songs, and explained the latest TikTok trends. If we've become part of your listening routine, we're asking that you support our work by joining Slate Plus. Sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/whatnextplus to keep us going for another 25 years. Again, we are giving you $25 off an annual membership through October 31st. So sign up now at slate.com/whatnextplus.
Right before the pandemic, Peter Hawley moved back home to Austin, Texas, his hometown, and he was kind of surprised by what he saw. Peter's a journalist for Texas Monthly magazine. He knew Austin had been booming, with tech jobs and tourist attractions generally becoming less weird.
There was one particular business that was really popular in Austin that was sold piñatas, and it was torn down and replaced with a business that catered to, it was like a cafe for cat owners.
This is not a surprising story, right? The piñata shop replaced by a cat cafe. That's a pretty typical trajectory for a sleepy town that heats up fast. It follows the basic gentrification blueprint. But Peter noticed something else as he settled into the new Austin, something almost eerie. There were just fewer people who lived there.
There's neighborhood streets where, you know, people used to hang out on their porches and talk, and people knew each other by name. And now you see them kind of replaced with these McMansions that people come into on the weekends and throw large parties and then take off.
The McMansions, the large parties, they're possible because houses that used to be rented for a year at a time by people who live in Austin are now rented for a weekend at a time by people who play there.
We had a handful of neighborhoods, particularly in East Austin, which was a largely Hispanic and Black community, that are close to downtown, and that has quickly transitioned into Airbnbs and vacation rental hotspots, turning these kind of close-knit communities into playgrounds for wealthy people and for partiers.
You might be feeling implicated in this. I am implicated in this. I am one of many happy customers of Airbnb and VRBO. I get a few rentals a year to go hang with family or stay someplace interesting. I never gave much thought to how I might be changing the neighborhoods where I'm staying. I told Peter this. He gets it.
It's even more ironic for me because I was so tired of being in a short-term rental neighborhood in Austin that I'm actually doing this interview from another short-term rental in Houston just to get away from the short-term rental market in Austin. So I am both fleeing the conditions and contributing to them simultaneously.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. It's like going on hunger strike because you're tired of starving.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't escape it anymore. This is like our new reality.
Peter got word from someone. If you think it's a twilight zone in Austin, check out Galveston. Galveston's less than an hour's drive from Houston. It's a barrier island in the Gulf, and it's been a vacation destination for decades. But it used to have a more working-class feel and a year-round contingent that has faded recently.
There's no one around. There's no kids, you know, riding bikes. There's no family sitting on porches. There's no sense that there's a community there. It almost feels kind of like a Disneyland-esque resort.
Today on the show, what happens when the entire neighborhood is just visiting? One town in Texas shows us the pitfalls of the short-term rental boom. This is What Next. I'm Mary Wilson, filling in for Mary Harris. Keep listening.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Can you describe driving out to Galveston Island? As I understand it, it's kind of an unusual juxtaposition of things.
Well, if you're coming from Houston, you're going through kind of this mass suburban sprawl, and you have to pass through communities that are kind of on the edge of this petrochemical industrial complex, one of the largest in the world. And you do get through that and you feel like you've kind of escaped something Mad Maxian. And then you get to the coast and there's kind of this sense of relaxation. You can start to smell the water and there's birds everywhere and you feel like you're moving into a different place. And it's really relaxing. And you go across a long multi-mile causeway and suddenly you're on the island and you really do feel like you've been transported to a new location and kind of a new culture. And one of the first things you really notice when you get onto the island is both the palm trees, but also these massive sprawling Victorian mansions that look like they haven't changed, you know, since the 1880s.
Let's talk about the vacation rentals. So it's not just Airbnb. There's a ton of these companies that have moved in. Can you characterize how a short-term rental in Galveston is typically used? Like, are people moving in and just spending a weekend? Are there people who are, like, trying to work remotely somewhere cool and they're spending a couple months?
Well, I think typically it's been people coming in and spending a long weekend there, often from Houston. That's the main source of tourists. But during the pandemic, you also had a lot of people coming from New York and California and other places who were spending several months there at a time.
Wow.
The economics, you know, people probably spend $150 to $200 a night. But some of these homes, especially the old historic ones, can go for more than $1,000 a night. So if you're a homeowner, there's a huge incentive to rent out your house and make far more than you ever could renting the property out conventionally.
Yeah, I was poking around online and there are all these property management companies that they're selling their services as they're able to manage your property for you. So you just buy the house and, you know, clean it up, I guess, and then they'll manage the rental for you. And what they tell prospective buyers is that the average guest spends about $240 a night for a vacation rental in Galveston. I mean, you know, it's in their interest to kind of round up, I guess, but that was kind of surprising to me. That's a lot.
It's a lot of money, and it adds up really quick. I mean, how much is that a week? That's got to be more than $1,000. And if you think about it from the perspective of an investor, if you know that you can make $250 a day buying a house that you can flip for $200,000 and start making that much money, I mean, it's a great investment for a lot of people. And there's a real incentive to invest and then not live on the island.
So you went to Galveston to get a feel for what it was like with this boom of short-term rentals. What did it feel like to walk around the neighborhoods where short-term rentals kind of dominated?
It's really strange because on the one hand, when you walk around these neighborhoods, they're really beautiful. A lot of these homes have been purchased and flipped and remodeled and oftentimes painted in like these beautiful pastel colors. And so you walk around the island and you're struck by the beauty. And it really has been an upgrade from where the island was maybe 10 years ago. But the flip side of that is that there's a sense of complete emptiness. We went to a particular neighborhood where short-term rentals have really proliferated. And in about a two-block space, there was maybe 20 short-term rentals. And as we walked around, all I saw, I didn't see any people, but I did see maids, you know, scurrying from one short-term rental to the other as if on some sort of timed clock, carrying cleaning supplies. And it was like being in a big open-air hotel, except it was outside and in the middle of the day. It was a really strange experience.
Mm-hmm. You got numbers from the city that show that there's about 5,000 homes on the island being used as short-term rentals, and the island only has about 30,000 homes. So based on my really shoddy math, I think that's about 17% of the island's homes are now rentals. Did you get any sense of if that's a big or a small number compared to other vacation towns?
What is kind of notable about that number is that since 2019, there's been about 1,000 new short-term rentals in Galveston each year. And so at its current pace, about a third of the island's housing stock would be short-term rentals within the next 5 or 6 years. And now that is like a really startling fact, the idea that a third of your city's housing is essentially empty.
Peter says there are benefits to the rental takeover happening in Galveston. The trend is giving one of the oldest cities in Texas a fresh coat of paint. The rental boom also helps economically. The city gets to take a 9% tax right off the top of every short-term rental. Another 6% tax goes to the state. So that's a lot of money to reinvest locally. But so far, that cash hasn't been enough to save long-term residents from being displaced.
There is a discussion that's just beginning about whether that money can be pushed towards affordable housing, because there's a major lack of affordable housing in Galveston. But it's right at the beginning stages of this conversation. And I think the reason for that is because the short-term rentals have grown so quickly, so dramatically over the last year or so. So people are making a lot of money. It's hard to actually get them to stop and say, hey, this is also a problem. Should we change it? People are kind of reveling in the cash flow. And I think it's going to take a few years and maybe even kind of more inequity for people to take a step back and say, hey, we need to fix this. It's kind of a more amplified version of what's happening everywhere else. It's also a city that's traditionally been a middle-class haven. And so it's harder, I think, on folks in Galveston than it would be in a place like Austin, where you have a lot of tech money and a lot of kind of professional money, and people can adapt more easily to the housing surge.
You know, Galveston is where the original Juneteenth celebration happened. It has this really significant, you know, history for Black Texans. But I understand that it's lost more than 40% of its Black residents over the past 20 years. I was wondering if you talked to anybody on the island while you were there who were frustrated by that.
Yeah, people are really frustrated because one of Galveston's kind of claims to fame, if you will, is the sense that it was this egalitarian, racially diverse haven for Texans. And losing 40% of the Black population over the last two decades is devastating. It changes the culture of the island and it changes kind of the historical legacy of the island. And it's becoming increasingly, with, you know, more investment and more outsiders, it's becoming an older, whiter population.
You talked to one woman who, she's been watching the prices go up for houses in Galveston. She moved there, I think, about 10 years ago. She moved there from Idaho. And I guess the surge in housing prices was also affecting her local property taxes, which had gone up something like 70% in the past year. And she was just one example of someone who might be priced out of Galveston. And she, you know, she's not even someone who's from the island. You know, she's a transplant herself. It just made me wonder, like, as people with wealth are moving in, as people who want to make an investment are moving in, who's being pushed out? Do you have a good sense of that?
The woman we're talking about, her name is Cody Wright, and she works as a bookkeeper. And she was drawn to Galveston because she realized, hey, I can live this kind of laid-back beach lifestyle and start my own business in a way that I couldn't if I was in Florida or California, and it would cost me millions of dollars to do the same. And so Cody, you know, in any other context, Cody is not like a vulnerable person. She has a successful business and she owns multiple houses, actually. And she may be forced out because of the significant rise in property taxes. So if someone like Cody's being forced out, you can definitely assume that somebody who's more low income, somebody who works like in the service industry or who works on cruise ships, or who is a firefighter or a teacher, or, you know, who has a middle-class income, there's no way that they can afford to live on the island anymore.
We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, some tourist towns are fixing their short-term rental problems. Could Galveston do the same?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Galveston sits on the Gulf of Mexico. That's part of the town's charm. It's got a beach. But it's also right in the path of high-intensity storms. And one thing Peter heard is that when people started getting priced off the island, Galveston lost this cadre of locals who knew how to weather a bad storm and what to do when it passed. That woman that Peter name-checked before the break, Cody Wright, she explained this to him.
As we mentioned before, Cody is from Idaho, and as soon as she got to the island, she realized that it had this kind of routine where after a big storm, people would go out into the streets and they would, you know, they'd clean up shingles out of the streets, they'd pick up trees, they'd look for down power lines, and they would check on their neighbors. And there was a storm last month where Cody kind of walked outside and realized that she didn't even know her neighbors anymore. There was no one to really check on. The houses that she normally would check on that used to be full of families were all short-term rentals. And so she just sort of stood there. And I think she walked back inside because there was really nothing to do. But what really struck her was that she no longer had a community and she no longer necessarily felt safe in the same way or taken care of.
Yeah, it just strikes me like, can you live somewhere like this without neighbors? I mean, you know, Galveston, I looked up the list of major storms and floods and hurricanes that have hit Galveston in the past century or so. The list is long. I mean, the town is not getting smacked every year, but big storms come with some regularity. It strikes me as the kind of place, like, if you're going to have real resilience of people and not just buildings, you kind of need people who live there and are looking out for you.
Yeah, Galveston gets smacked by a really big hurricane every 15 years or so. But with climate change, they're seeing big storms with some regularity now. It's a place that's always been marked by its resilience and its sense of community and this kind of pride in rebuilding when the island is devastated. So it's interesting to think about what that looks like in the future when people can't afford to live there and you have first responders and firefighters and policemen who are now forced off the island as well. Like, will the island be able to rebuild? Will people be safe if there's not many people around and they're kind of isolated when a storm hits?
Do people in Galveston see a connection between storms and gentrification?
I think they absolutely do. I think there's a real sense that, hey, if our firefighters can't live here, what are we going to do when the island is inundated with flooding? And when you have older folks and vulnerable residents who are trapped there. And it very much is a realistic possibility. In 2008, Hurricane Ike, you know, wiped out the island entirely. I think it filled the island with 8 or 10 feet of flooding and people were trapped. So this isn't like this isn't recent history. This is like a very real possibility of a storm hitting Galveston and people not having first responders there to help them.
One thing I've read about that's really troubling about Galveston is that same hurricane you mentioned, Hurricane Ike, in 2008. One of the things it caused was a storm surge that flooded a bunch of public housing buildings, and they had to be raised. And some 12 years later, they still, half of them hadn't been rebuilt. So the island, I mean, you and I are talking about, you know, affordable housing, middle-income housing disappearing. But it looks like most of the lower-income housing has long since disappeared on Galveston Island.
Yeah, I think Ike destroyed like 60% of the island's public housing. And it was one of the first kind of changes that ushered in this new era of prosperity in some ways on the island, where you lost public housing and it was replaced by upscale housing and housing that has since become short-term rentals. So there's a connection between hurricanes and affordability that continues to this day.
And so is the rhythm basically a hurricane comes in, destroys a bunch of property, people who have money to rebuild or buy up more property maybe and make an investment, and people who don't have spare money get out of Dodge?
That's exactly right. And I think Hurricane Ike was the first time that that really made itself known. You know, certainly with every disaster, certain people see economic opportunity, and Galveston is no different. And I think what it really comes down to is storm insurance. And so people who can afford expensive storm insurance will always have the ability to rebuild, and people who can't afford storm insurance find themselves at a real loss. And so the other thing about that is that it makes it less likely for people to come back to the island, because if you can't afford the insurance and you know another hurricane is going to come in a decade, why would you invest there?
If affordable housing is the problem, what are some of the proposed remedies?
Some of the remedies look similar to what New Orleans has done with their short-term rental market, where they placed caps on the number of rentals in some neighborhoods, and they outright banned short-term rentals in other neighborhoods. The city realized that it was losing its culture and its history to the Airbnbs and the VRBOs of the world, and it took really decisive action. And from what I understand, it's already helped quite a bit.
Oh, wow. That's so promising. When I look at Galveston, and when I think about the story you're telling about Galveston, it's a story that's, you know, it's a story that's paused in the middle. You know, we're looking at this city as it's in the middle of a story. And I really don't know how it's going to shake out. And in ways, you know, Galveston is really unique because it is subject to such extreme weather events. But in other ways, it's really not unique. It's in the middle of this trend that's affecting some of my favorite sleepy, gritty towns all over the country. And I just feel like I'm really rooting for them to, you know, figure it out, because I just wonder which towns are going to emerge with the smartest policies. You know, like you mentioned, New Orleans figured some stuff out. I wonder if there will be more innovations to come that will make it so that not just people who can afford to buy up three properties can make an investment in a town and really live there.
Yeah, I do think you're right that we're in the middle of a story and we don't know how it's going to play out. It's going to be really interesting to see, but Galveston has this long history of resilience. But I think in some ways, like, this might be its biggest storm for, you know, it's kind of a corny way to put it, but this is a storm.
As in the short term, you see the short term rental boom as a storm in and of itself?
I do. I see it as kind of an economic storm that the city hasn't really experienced before. And I do wonder if the city will be able to respond to it the way it has with actual physical hurricane storms. I don't know the answer to that.
Peter Hawley, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Peter Hawley is a senior editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. And that's the show. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Daniel Hewitt, Davis Land, Carmel Delshad, and me, Mary Wilson. We get guidance each and every day from Allison Benedict and Alicia Montgomery. Our super host, Mary Harris, will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that
people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.